special edition of the Nancy Skinner Show. And unfortunately, it's live from Detroit. On this, the 100th day mark in the Obama presidency. Yes, that's right. Unfortunately, it's a live show. That means I'm not in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. Unfortunately for me, may or may not be fortunate for you, depending on your viewpoint. We're going to get into it too. I got lots in store. Due to circumstances outside my control, my trip was, I couldn't go. Trip was canceled. But let's just keep in mind, outside my control, was fully prepared to go to Mexico, made the move, did not buy the hype, the fear, didn't buy it, had my Tamiflu in hand, was ready to be, I should be on a plane right now, in fact, was my plane was leaving at 3 o'clock. So here I am with you, which makes me happy. It is 100 day and there's a lot going on, and we're going to get into the hysteria over the flu coming up in the program. I'll save this email I got about that. Wacky stuff. So, all right, so it is the 100th day, and obviously big primetime press conference tonight that everyone will be covering, except for Fox, the network, not the news station. I think Fox News Channel is. Who knows? So I had to regroup here, given these plans, and figure out what I felt we should talk about on these important days. And as you know, I read both the New York Times, of course, and the Wall Street Journal, to be fair and balanced. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's see, what story is really going to get me going today? And I'm like, okay, the president has, unlike any other president, he took office with what? A record deficit, two wars, global economic meltdown, and by that I mean a credit bubble, a housing bubble, a recession, a commodity bubble, an equity bubble, a home or hedge fund bubble, private equity bubble, mortgage bubble, a terrible healthcare and energy system, a banking crisis, credit crunch, an auto industry on the brink of collapse, and now swine flu on his to-do list. Okay? So let's make his to-do list just a little bit easier, because here's another request that came in to him today. I see in the Wall Street Journal. Citigroup, soon to be one-third owned by the U.S. government, is asking the Treasury for permission to pay special bonuses to many key employees, according to people who are following it. There's a special unit inside Citigroup that makes a lot of money called, it's Philbro. It's the energy trading unit. And people at that unit are threatening to leave because of pay caps tied to the U.S. bailout of Citigroup. They have been the source of hundreds of millions of dollars in profits for the bank and have paid out hefty compensation to its employees, including, this is a clear your throat, sit up straight in your chair, $100 million, just like Dr. Evil, $100 million to one dude, Andrew Hall. Andy got $100 million windfall because he's so good at trading gas that was $4 a gallon and the rest of the country was getting screwed. He was making the trades and got $100 million bonus. And he's threatening to leave, Phil Bro. Oh, no. Andy's threatening to leave. They're finding a way to remove federal restrictions on Philbro, including spinning it off so that they can pay Andy what he deserves. Meanwhile, Citigroup is trying to get the approval for bonuses for many of its employees in the rest of the company outside of Philbro. They met with Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and the Citigroup CEO, made the case for stock-based bonuses. They described them as retention awards designed to perk up demoralized employees who the company worries are vulnerable to poaching by rival firms. So let's just make this job very easy for the president, given that long list, and just say, the CEO at Citigroup, who's also fighting any reform of the banking industry, the outrageous credit charges and doubling of interest and all this stuff, they're fighting it while they're asking for this. What is his name? His name is Vikram Pandit. Dear Mr. Pandit, N.O., love, Mr. President, joining me to talk about whether we, the taxpayers, should give Andy $100 million to trade energy. In this time, when I walked into the station here at Clear Channel, the receptionist, Pam, has been here for 19 years, the sweetest woman. So I said today, where's Pam been the last 2 days? He said she got let go. Wave after wave after wave of people. I'm sure Pam would have liked a little bonus to perk her up, because she's pretty demoralized that she's been a receptionist for 19 years, and there's been wave after wave of layoffs here in Detroit. So it's a very easy answer for me. Now, I'm going to get a different opinion probably from my next guest, but I am not sure. Jordan Goodman is America's Money Answer Man and the author of Fast Profits in Hard Times, 10 Strategies to Get Rich in an Up or Down Economy, which sounds like a good read no matter what, which way you go. He's also gives a lot of his financial advice on the Today Show, Fox News Network, Fox Business Network, where I got to warn you, Jordan, I also am on that network as well, CNN, CNBC, and others. Worked at Money Magazine for a long time as the Wall Street correspondent, and he's with me now. Jordan, obviously you know how I feel about the Citigroup wanting to give retention bonuses.
I do indeed. It's great to be with you, Nancy.
Thanks for coming.
And I agree with you. It's just outrageous. I mean, here we have been putting in literally hundreds of billions of dollars into these banks, and they've been losing hundreds of billions of dollars. And we already own, you know, most of Citibank at this point. And to keep going as though everything was the same as it was before in the good old days, and to give these guys enormous bonuses is just beyond outrageous. Now, the way these guys look at it, I mean, I know a lot of them on Wall Street, what they're doing, they're not trying to save the world, they're trying to make money. That's all mm-hmm. it's about. And if they make money, they feel they can get a big piece of the action out. It's called Fibro, is the division of Citibank.
So I was calling it Filbro. It's yeah. Fibro?
It's Fibro.
Oh, I stand corrected. Thank you for that.
And originally, it was part of Salomon Brothers, way back. This has been a major commodities and energy trading firm for 100 years. I mean, it was, you know, before that, it was its own thing, became part of Salomon Brothers, and when Smith Barney got Salomon Brothers, when Citibank bought Smith Barney, they got Fibro as part of the deal. It's always been this kind of little piece, you know. Mm-hmm. But they made $667 million in profits last year.
Because, you know, because commodities has had its ups and downs, has it not, Jordan?
They can make it either way, right? What? It doesn't matter if it's
because they're traders.
It's just as long as you're doing the right trade. And last year was a fantastic year for energy trading, because remember, we had oil going up to $150 a barrel.
Right.
Long, then it plunged down to $30 a barrel, and they were short, and they were making it both directions. That's what these guys are about, is making money. And so for them,
so they made,
you know, 600 they've been getting bonuses for years. This is what these guys live on.
But isn't that even is saying that, even if now we get the gig, $600 million profits, okay, to pay out a $100 million bonus, I mean,
it's a lot. But this is what these guys are used to. You know, they really are. Now, this is on the high end, I must say, but a lot of the people who've left Citibank.
I sure hope so, because if we're on the low end, I'd need defibrillators right now, to be honest.
But I mean, a lot of these people, in the same story you have, there's a little chart here. You know, all these people who left Citi got, you know, $19 million, $10 million, $8 million, and so on. You know, this is the way these guys do it. Now, what has actually been happening on Wall Street is a lot of the top guys at Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and all these places have been leaving because they're very concerned, and rightly so, that they're not going to get the bonuses they were used to in the past because these companies have taken TARP money.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major reasons why these banks want to give the TARP money back is so they can start, you know, paying the big bonuses.
Oh, you know, that, and, you know, that one little sentence in President Obama's speech in one of his things where he said that we're actually going to look at getting paid for performance. I bet those three words strung together.
Well, I mean, in the case of Fibro, they did have good performance, but the overall bank did not. So if you just look at Fibro itself, yes, because oil prices went up, oil prices went down, they made money both ways. But
paying one of your employees a sixth of all your revenues is way, you know, that again. So this is the executive compensation. And so these guys are, but so some of them are leaving, you're saying, because of this TARP money. Who's poaching them? Where are they going? Because
hedge funds are taking them in.
Hedge funds are upside down too.
Well, some of them are, but not all of them. And in many cases, what they're doing is forming their own funds. They're forming their own boutique investment banking firms, hedge funds. This is actually a great time to start one if you don't already have a bunch of toxic assets. It's actually a great time to start a hedge fund. It's a great time to start a bank, right? Because here you have the government giving you money at 0%, right? If you borrow from the Federal Reserve today, you get it at 0%. And you can lend it out at 18 or 25 on a credit card and just gouge people. It's a wonderful time to start a bank.
Are you talking PPIP?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but don't you have to be an approved PPIP profiteer? Or I mean, don't you already have to have been an established fund to participate?
No, but these guys can raise money very quickly. So that's where they're going, is they're going to either existing or new boutiques where they can, they're certainly not going to take TARP money, and they can take whatever salaries and bonuses they want.
All right, so listen, if you can, you know what I would like to do, Jordan, you're a smart guy here, especially if you can stay with me. I want
to
finish this up, and then I'm going
to
invite people because making money up in the good and bad times is really, I want to hear more on that. Because
sure.
I think, I like how you're thinking.
All
right, so hang on. This is Jordan Goodman, America's Money Answer Man, talking Citibank bonuses. This one is so easy. This is an N-O. Sorry. Go make money elsewhere. And then, you know, think about that. Maybe we've got some good ideas. How I want to trade up and down and make $100 million and get perked up because I'm demoralized because I didn't get to go to Mexico. 1-888-64 Nancy 1-888-646-2629 and then Nancy Skinner. Here we go with, unfortunately, a live edition of the Nancy Skinner Show from Detroit, not Mexico. Okay, so.
At least you're safe, Nancy.
Yeah, I would have been safe down there, too. There's too much hysteria and too much hype, trust me. We need to put attention on this, but it's maybe there's a good reason I can raise a ruckus about what Citigroup is trying to do.
Right, that's a good
there's
reason.
A reason for everything. Joining me to talk about this is the voice of Jordan Goodman. He's America's Money Answer Man and has written the book Fast Profits in Hard Times, 10 Secret Strategies to Get Rich in an Up or Down Economy, which is always a good thing these days. So just to finish this up, and if you're on the phone,
sure.
Some people want to ask you some questions, but if you're just tuning in, Citibank, the group that you know has been basically screwing tax card payers for years,
right.
and took major buku, it was $50 billion in taxpayer dollars, will own like a third of this company.
Plus, we're guaranteeing another $300 billion of their loans too. On top of that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so
right.
They get.
Don't forget the $300 billion.
I forgot about that. And they're raising interest rates on our cards to help pay for this. Now they are going to the government wanting to do retention bonuses to pay out to one of their, the unit, Fibro, which is their energy trading unit, which made, you know, I noticed in that article you said $667 million. That's in pre-tax revenue. So listen, that guy, Andy Hall, who got a $100 million bonus, and now he's threatening to leave. But first of all, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you, Andy.
Right.
Buddy,
that happened with John Thane. Remember, all these guys, when they leave, they think they're entitled to just incredible millions of dollars when they've lost billions for shareholders.
Right. And then that's deductible, too. You know what I mean? That revenue, that comes off of their taxable income.
Them another way. We know, to the deductions, Uncle Sam subsidizes them again, I guess.
Right. Absolutely. Let's get a quick call. Dave's in Buffalo. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how are you, Nancy? I'm so sorry to hear about your trip to Cabo.
Wow.
That's absolutely one of my favorite places in the world.
Yeah, well,
you'll get to go.
Thanks.
You'll get to go and enjoy. Listen, on point, and with respect to Mr. Goodman's remarks as well, aren't these the same exact guys that were doing all of that speculation that drove the price of gas that you and I were paying at the pump up as much as 60%?
Absolutely.
That's a really
correct.
Good question. Yes,
why would I want to reward them?
You are correct. I mean, when oil went up, it went up because of demand and supply, but it didn't go up that much because of supply and demand didn't change that much. But why it rocketed from $100 to $150 a barrel was because of exactly firms like Fibro that were the big speculators in there. You know,
Mr. Hall, I hope you have a great retirement, but not on my dough.
But you're exactly right. And they move it either direction. When things are going up, they pile in. When things are going down, they pile out. And they exacerbate the movements up and down. Remember when oil was up to $150 and gas was $4?
Yeah.
And people were looking for conspiracies. you know, Fiber was one of the
There's it.
Major firms.
So ties, it loops back perfectly. We've been screwed every which way. Jordan Goodman, you're terrific. Your website is moneyanswers.com. Will you come back and join us?
Glad to do it. I'm glad to answer people's questions on all kinds of personal finance issues as well.
Did you hear that, guys? Moneyanswers.com. So thanks, Jordan. We appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Nancy.
And we'll have him back. We're going to continue a little bit with this whole thing, because does it get worse than this? And they're giving the automakers a hard time? Police! There's a reason why I stayed home on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Some people claim that there's a wrong to blame, but I know.
You are one sick puppy, Krieger.
Just a lonely gringo. Desperado.
I called the Gringo Gazette down in Cabo San Lucas yesterday and said, hey, how's everything down there? Like that whole swine flu? You wouldn't even know that there was swine flu if you didn't have the internet. There's people are, everything's open and it's great. But due to circumstances outside my control, called hysteria. I am not in Cabo San Lucas. I'm here with you on the Nancy Skinner Show. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. And I listed, it was funny, in the last hour, I was trying to list the 100 days what the president has to deal with. And who is this?
Say a command.
Help me. Get me out of here. Let's see. Bill wrote in. Don't forget the pirates. Yeah, I forgot pirates, actually. I'm sure he didn't plan on swine flu pilots or the global economic meltdown. Just the other stuff. But you want something to get hysterical about. If you're just tuning into the show, I was hysterical reading the Wall Street Journal today. Citigroup, okay, Citibank, Citigroup, credit card company, who just notoriously bad all these years for gouging consumers, raising interest rates, even now raising interest rates. They took $50 billion in TARP money. And they have gone, even there's hearings on it right now. I was meaning to get to that. They have literally gone to the government. This is how obscene this is. They had this one unit called Fibro, which is an energy trading unit, which my last guest, Jordan Goodman, just said, helped run the prices of oil up. But there were speculators that helped run the prices of oil up so much that drove the markets. So these guys, we all paid for that $4 a gallon gas. And it pretty much, you want my personal take, was the reason that the auto industry, I mean, it was one of the reasons, okay, folks, a lot of reasons. But the reason really when the auto industry really finally fell over the cliff, okay? So this Fibro unit, among other energy traders, but this is at Citigroup, they make $660 million pre-tax revenues. One guy who runs the unit, Andrew Hall, makes a $100 million bonus in 1 year on $664 pre-tax. Okay, so we're subsidizing all this stuff because the deduction from their income, obviously, you know, they pay fewer corporate taxes. And what difference does it make? All I can hear in 100 days, my little honey bunny, all he had to talk about on the radio on the way in was this stupid flyover in New York. And we're going to get to that because, you know, the way the media is going to play this whole stupid 100-day thing. Grade him on your – call in and give him a grade. We're going to get the ghost of Christmas, what would have been had we not done this. And then maybe there's a conversation to have about grading the president. But until you see what would have been, it's ridiculous. So let me get, let me finish one thought at a time. I know this is just, this stuff gets me insane. 1-888-646-2629. So this group, Fibro, they make some money. This guy makes a lot of money. Now the Citigroup has gone to the government asking to pay retention bonuses because they want to perk up demoralized employees, and they're afraid that they're going to leave, that Andy's going to go somewhere else where he's going to be able to make $100 million ripping off consumers as a wild speculator on energy prices, okay, that we all paid for. And since we own Citigroup, or a third of it, they want you to pay Andy so he's not bummed out. at the loss of this year's $100 million. As I walk into an office building that is a ghost building because they've laid off almost everybody, and Pam, the sweetest receptionist who's there every single day, she's worked here 19 years, and finally, like every day, it's so morose. This person's gone. That desk is cleaned out. Joel Porter, who's this wonderful guy, loves the show. He's gone. I got a note from him. And me, I'm being asked as a taxpayer to pay Andy Hall money because he's demoralized that he's not making his $100 million, screwing this country every which way. What I don't get is, how do these people sleep with themselves at night? Honestly, what is in your head now? And now he's briefing, the CEO is briefing employees about, well, here's the status of what we asked the president to do. We've got a plan saying we're going to have our stock, and you could get your reward. It'll vest over 3 years. We'll limit it to 50% of the pay over 3 years. Wouldn't you love to get a 50% bonus? You take your three-year pay and get like 50% of that in one lump sum, courtesy of the taxpayer? And these people, these are the people on the other side that talk about welfare and making individualism, rugged individual, making your way, and we can't have a social safety net. Anything we do is socialism. Who are the beneficiaries of this socialism that we've had to do, rightly so? But this is such an easy answer for the president. This is such a no-brainer. No, you're not getting bonuses. And if people leave your company and they can't trade at that enormous speculation, or if they go somewhere else, then they have to get a job, tough. Okay? Tough. No and tough. Maybe I'm just crappy because I'm not in Mexico. Let's go to Long Beach and get Ken in here. Hi, Ken.
Hey, hi, Nancy. Oh, okay. What your guest failed to mention, the one thing he did mention, like, okay, he says this guy Andy Hall, you know, made, you know, on the upside $100 million, but I never hear, you know, Rush Limbaugh or any of these people, you know, they talk about these guys like they have such great abilities above and beyond normal men. But what happens at the downside when they lose money? See, they don't have to pay anything for that. Like me, I myself personally have experience with this. I bought gold back in the 80s for $800 an ounce, you know. And it fell to, like, I sold it at 400 finally. It fell in half. That came right out of my hide, you know. These guys don't have any downside. They only have an upside, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the thing that your fellow didn't mention there, that there is no downside to these guys. They can borrow money at 0%. And a homeless person off the street probably could make money, you know. I could find some illegal alien and loan him money at 0% interest, and, you know, maybe he might make a lot of money if he does a lot of irresponsible gambling.
But the act that this guy is so important, Andrew Hall, that there's no one else that could sit there and trade, you know, speculate on oil, come on a, you know, anyone could do it with an E-Trade account. I'm sure he has a certain level of expertise
loses,
in finance.
It doesn't come out of his hide if he loses, though.
That's the whole point that really upsets me, Ken, is that there is so much consternation about, and yesterday we talked about Arlen Specter, and the big, everything boils down to what they do. This is irresponsible spending. It's all the stimulus bill. Listen, and as we assess these 100 days, if that bill had not gone through, because the Fed has some breaking news, I'm going to be talking about that and some numbers coming out today, had we not done what we needed to do, which was what you're saying, socialize their losses, then we would have all paid this much, much greater price. And it's really hard for people to understand that.
I say I hope Obama doesn't, you know, buy into this, because he has surrounded himself with some of these guys that have created the problem, you know. And these guys think that just for tying their shoelaces in the morning, they should get $6 million, you know.
Yeah.
So I hope he doesn't buy into this.
Well, buy into what? Oh, the bonuses?
That these guys are some kind of gods or something. Well, you say that Andy hasn't gotten the money yet.
No, he hasn't. He's threatening to leave, though. He's threatening to leave. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? If Andrew leaves Fibro at Citigroup.
Let's pay him to leave. I'd pay him to leave. How about that?
That's a good suggestion. Thanks, Ken.
That's what Obama should be talking about. They should get money to leave
and
never come back.
No, I just can't even imagine that they would say they would buy into this. I would be shocked. I would be shocked.
Not retention bonuses, expulsion bonuses.
There you go. Good idea, Ken. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Appreciate it. 1-888-64 Nancy. What does he say? Honestly, I think that you use this as a moment. I think obviously the answer is no. And it's just, to me, such a huge disconnect. In the auto industry, we're going to talk about that. There's some developments. Tomorrow is D-Day for Chrysler, so big news, and it's changing by the moment. So you need to keep up on the Live from Detroit show here. But you know, everyone's had to take huge cuts. The UAW, essentially, to save Chrysler, they took the health care fund, their retiree health care fund. They were promised this money over so many years. They're going to take half of that in equity. So the UAW is going to have to make that money up. Okay, these were contracts. These people worked all these years, and you're going to get, this is what you're going to get. Now they're retired. They're going to take half of that and say, we believe in this company. We're just going to take equity and fund those. And so many other people are hurting at every level. I just can't. And Citigroup, they just had hearings last week. They're raising rates on cardholders even as they take money. See, I said this, if you will remember, a couple months back, just to the beginning of this, I said, you know, I think one of the best ways to get liquidity right into the economy is to cap the interest rate on credit cards at 15%. And if they're at 30 right now, immediately repeal them back to 15%. And I think that that's what should happen. I do. I know that I haven't followed these hearings as closely as I should have with everything else going on, but I think that they should just repeal it from 30, the top rate, which if you're day late, you're up to 30, and take it down to 15%. Because think of how this is the area, housing prices, the numbers are in today, and the good news is they only fell 18.6% year on year. That's actually good news, because it wasn't 19. So things are, like, really ugly, but they're not quite as ugly as they were last month. But mortgage or credit card debt is what's really killing people. We're going to go through this. So why not? I would not only say no to Andy Hall getting his $100 million, I would say right back, we've just capped the maximum APR at 15%. Have a great day with a little smiley face on it or something. You know, that's what I would do. I would do that. Thank you very much. If I were president. But I'm not. I'm not even in Mexico. 1-888-64-NANCY. What would you write back? You get creative. All my creative listeners who write me such beautiful, touching screens. What would you write back to the chair of Citigroup who wants bonuses with your money because they made a lot of money screwing us on and oil prices? What would your notes say? I'm sure you could think of something creative. 1-888-646-2629. Live from the Motor City. Love me, hate me show. It is Nancy Skinner, yep. And I am live from Detroit, hometown Detroit, on their very important day here, which is the deadline tomorrow, Chrysler deadline tomorrow. I got during the break, I just got to share, if you don't mind, because I was kind of bummed out. I was supposed to be playing the Cabo, but that didn't happen. So I got some strange emails. I'm trying to find this one, but But I, so let's see. There's another one. I can just pull one. So some Nancy, so some neocon sympathizer, that must be me, in a position to disseminate a poll result, pulls out, oh no, it must have been someone on my show, a number out of his, I would say, rear end. And everyone becomes credulously convinced it's a legitimate figure. The public is too uninformed to catch such things, and people like yourself are too interested in realizing their own agendas to do the noble thing and expose such falsehoods. Really? Then it's not working out too well for me. People like you understand this and exploit it for all it's worth. People of your mindset are dangerous, Nancy. You embrace the fascist media element who protects and facilitates the hideous government corruption which maims and slaughters defenseless families in distant lands. I've done all that? Wow. You've got blood from the innocent dripping from your hands. Me. I was like out there before the war in Iraq and got thrown off the air saying this was a complete disaster. Who is this, JB? Even though I was the one who was out there risking my career because I said what needed to be said. Go ahead. Continue to chuckle and smirk while pushing your selfish issues. Yeah, I know you love politics, you evil witch with the B. JB. I'm just not feeling the love out of that letter. I don't know if, about you, but it's just, it's not coming across. But what is, oh my goodness. I just got a parcel post. Someone came in during the break from London. And somebody who does feel differently said, what's not to love about a woman who's unafraid to put up her dukes screaming in London? John. And he sent me a lovely thing of chocolates, Dukes of London chocolate, celebrating 100 years from London. So thank you, John. That is really sweet, especially since I just had JV tell me I have the blood of innocence on my hands personally because I tried to stop the war in Iraq. And then, get this, Tracy Hughes. Okay, Tracy's a listener in Los Angeles, and Tracy was upset that about the news that I will be leaving on May 11th. KTLK Airwaves in this time slot piece, Randy Rhodes is making her comeback on May 11th with Premier Radio Networks, which is associated with Clear Channel Networks, and so therefore KTLK and KPOG will air Randy in her former time slot. And Tracy is a fan of the show and actually sent out to Sharon, Sharon brought them to me, chocolates, they're chocolates, suckers and chocolates with my picture on them that says, keep Nancy Skinner on the air on these suckers and chocolates, and a beautiful package. And that's Tracy Hughes. And, so she sent some over to KTLK and others saying, we will miss Nancy in Los Angeles. So her company, because they're really good chocolates, first of all, and it's just, I feel so good because I see this and gosh. Well, thank you, Tracy. Her website is www.imagesprintedonchocolate.com, and that's a very creative business. We should support little businesses like all business right now, but this is a great idea, messaging with chocolate. And so to John, Dukes of London, wow, thank you. And Tracy Hughes at imagesprintedonchocolate.com that said, keep Nancy Skinner on the air. So if you want one, I'm sure she can make you up some. And they're really good. But it's a picture of me back in my WLS days. That's right. When I started Progressive Radio, one of the pioneers back in 97. JB, when I was out there. Embracing the fascist media, even though I was one of the first progressive hosts in the country out there showing up, risking you know, at my whole financial career to deliver a message. So anyways, from the Love You, Hate You file. This, because I knew the power of media, I'll tell you that, a long time ago. And if I made my point with this swine flu hysteria, that's what it is. Complete hysteria. That what happened to me and when I'm talking, I was at the Verizon store this morning. Unbelievable hysteria that the media has been able to whip up. If you put this into perspective, that is the power of media, folks. And so we're going to talk about that coming up next after some chocolates in a few minutes. Some coffee and chocolates during the break of the Nancy Skinner Show.
Lay on you, the cold blow.
Too. I got some fans sent me some chocolates that were fabulous, and I appreciate that. And so does Krieger. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. Yes, I'm live from Detroit. It didn't happen due to circumstances outside of my control. I was totally prepared to go. Read the hype, the swine flu stuff, going to Cabo San Lucas, called down there. Everything's fine. Talked to the editor of the Gringo Gazette. They hadn't had a single reported case in Cabo San Lucas, talked to the hotel across the street. Everything's fine. It's a place like Jennifer Aniston hangs out and stuff. No, everyone's, you know, schools are shut down. Other than that, you wouldn't even know because the schools across the Mexico. And I'm ready to go. And the hysteria, I'm telling you, over this. This is what the power of media does. So I get this email from Charles. Now, I think this is funny. I think this is, he's trying to be funny. I don't know, but it's creepy. About my trip to Cabo, because we were going back and forth, should I go or not, given the, you know, what, there were 150 deaths in Mexico. Today we heard that there was a death of a toddler here in the United States in Los Angeles, but something like I don't know what it's. We'll be checking the numbers soon. And so I really analyzed all that information, and I put it through my knowledge of media filters and how hype flies across the world, and was ready to go. Absolutely, took precautions. Went, you know, Tamiflu in case I got it. Whatever, I had this stuff. The trip got called off, and Charles was trying to stop me all along with various emails. Finally, it got to this point. He wrote, Nancy, I know you're straddling the fence over your planned trip to Cabo. I've tried using reason and logic. I even sent information on an alternative trip to Mexico in the days of yore, but still you aren't convinced. So here's my strongest argument. I didn't want to go there, but you left me no choice. So there you are, sporting your itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot bikini on the Cabo beaches. All eyes are on you. Everyone wants to know about you. The locals are gathered together, all abuzz. Finally, they send a companero to speak to you. Companero 1, Ms. Nancy, you are so bonita. My friends were wondering, how did you come here? Ms. Nancy, tell them I flew. Companero, she says, flew. Todos la companeros. She's flu. Kill her before she gives us the flu. Cut to a Fox News reporter. We have a sad story to report from Cabo San Lucas, Mexico today. A dead white girl was found on the beach. She wasn't a victim of the drug wars. No, she didn't die of the flu. It appears that she was killed by the locals because they thought she said she had the flu. The dead white girl found in Mexico today was Fox News contributor and sacrificial liberal Nancy Skinner. Nancy, rest in peace. Fox News crawler, as a liberal, Skinner was so naive, we never even had to pay her. Rest in peace. it sure was fun to rip you. Boy, what a day. I certainly hope that's not on my, what is it called, epitaph. All right. Complete 36,000 people die every single year of the flu, the normal influenza. I looked some of this up. 3,200 people a day in car crashes. Some 400 people a year die in lightning strikes. Are we overhyping this to the point where people are now? There are bans on U.S. pork by countries all over the world who think that they're going to get it from eating swine. There is hysteria going on that is disproportionate to the threat that it really poses. Not to say it's an insignificant threat, but it's out of proportion, hysterical, out of proportion response in ways we should be more hysterical about global warming than we're not. So let's talk a little bit about the level of what's important to you and your family and how hysterical or not hysterical one should be at this moment. Joining me to talk about that is Dr. Francisco Contreras. He's the director and president and chairman of Oasis Hope Hospital in the Playas de Tijuana, Mexico, and he's the author of Hope, Medicine, and Healing. Dr. Contreras, thanks for joining the program. I could be better. I was supposed to be on a plane at this very moment en route to Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, Los Cabos, and it was called off. And there was a tad bit of this. The situation was this hysteria that's involved in this. Yes. What do you think about that, sir? Are you in Tijuana?
Well, that's where I live and that's where I work. Right now, you caught me in Newport Beach. But that's where I live, and I just want to let you know that life is normal where we are in Tijuana. But I think the Mexican government is doing the correct thing because this is a new virus. And it is a combination of a porcine or a swine virus with an avian virus, and that's why there is so much concern. Now, having said that, the beauty or the good thing about it is that it's very treatable. And really, no one has to die because of it. There are, about 115 deaths in Mexico, of which only 22 have been proven to have died because of this new virus. And fortunately, all of these people have died for lack of resources. The treatment is about $50 a pop, and for a lot of Mexicans, that's a lot of money. And they didn't know that it worked. So now we know that the treatment that is available is very.
Are we talking? We're talking Tamiflu, and the other one is
exactly.
Is what's the name of the other treatment, sir?
The other one with an R, but I don't remember.
Right.
So they are very effective, and now the Mexican government has acquired a million doses from England of the Tamiflu. And I hope that there are no more deaths because of it. So
is that what we think that those who died in Mexico? I had the Surgeon General on the program a couple of days ago, and at that point they didn't know if we're talking about a different strain, if it was more virulent in Mexico, but it wasn't. You're just saying that they let it get to the point where they had severe pneumonia, and then the pneumonia complications actually killed them.
Exactly. And as you mentioned before, there's a lot of people dying. In the United States, where all the resources are available of the normal flu. So I think that Mexico has taken the right precautions because with a new virus, it takes about seven to ten days to break a cycle. And that's why they closed all schools, all gatherings. There are no soccer. The soccer matches are being played without any people. Large companies with manufacturing, for instance, are closed. And everything is going to be reopened on the 6th of May, and they're giving about 3 or 4 extra days. But that, having said that, people traveling to Mexico are in very little danger of this disease. One, acquiring it, and if you do acquire it, the treatment is very effective.
Okay, so I'm hearing everything you're saying, Dr. Contreras. And here's the breaking news on CNN. World Health Organization raises alert to second highest level, indicating swine flu nears widespread human infection. 90, we know that it's human to human. We've figured that out. Why would the WHO continue to raise this alert? It's a flu that is human to human, but this is lots of you know, that lots of viruses are human to human, lots of flus. I don't understand.
Exactly. The reason, as I mentioned before, it's a new virus, and it's of the type A, where you just have to be careful. I think that Mexico is the one that took the biggest hit. And, you know, the government was quite courageous in doing all of that because it's going to hit us economically terribly.
I'm not drinking margaritas in Cabo San Lucas right now. You better believe it's going
to. Yeah, it is catastrophic. Yeah. But, you know, everybody is going to benefit from what Mexico did. And I don't think that other countries, especially developed countries, need to worry too much. Maybe underdeveloped countries that are similar to us should be a little bit more worried about, you know, the pandemic. But fortunately, this virus is a very sensitive virus to treatment that is available now, antiviral agents that work for H1N1 type A. And so my concern level now is quite low.
Even as the WHO raises it,
that's what they're there, and you know they're going to be criticized either way.
So yeah, if they didn't do it
they
right,
better be, they rather be criticized for an overreaction than for no reaction.
For an underreaction, but what you do though then is you
create a panic.
Yeah, but you can also, there's a moral hazard in continuing to raise the alert level, because when, let's say, the avian bird flu or a lethal virus pandemic does take shape and you've done this thing, people have been through this, and this is this swine flu isn't what, you know, we fear, then they'll take it with a grain of salt when they shouldn't. And when
that is correct. That is a danger. But, you know, since you need a very specific DNA testing for this, it took a number of days. And I think that right now most scientists agree that they have discovered what the strain is, the DNA structure of this, and how virulent it is. And fortunately, we found out that it's not that virulent.
And it'll be contained, and you might be out, you might miss some work, but you'll be all right for the most part.
Exactly.
Not outside the bounds of a normal flu that does have fatalities.
Cause exactly.
We're human beings.
Exactly.
And they're viruses, and they win a lot.
Yes.
Dr. Francisco Contreras, thank you so much for that dose of sanity. And I'm so sorry. I'll be back, though. You better believe I love Mexico. It's a beautiful country, and I'll find my way back.
Well, take the plane and go to Cabo and enjoy it.
I will. Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So what do you think about that, folks? He's saying, like, okay, they're treating it. It's fine. It's treatable. It's not deadly. I'm at the Verizon store. Everyone at the desk is all freaking out. People are shutting their businesses down. The World Health Organization raising it to the high alert level. What are you going to do when the real thing hits? That's my point. When we go through this, the media is so powerful. So when we talk about media oxygen and people ask me about what I mean by that, this is what I mean by it. The media has the ability to focus the entire public's concentration for good or ill. Trust me, because it could be used for good. If there was a concerted effort worldwide, a pandemic of fear about the fact that as I talked about on MSNBC, that the Arctic ice is going to melt completely in 4 years. 4 years. Imagine if every news channel you turned on is like, oh my God, look, it's melting, it's melting. World Health Order, everyone went, oh my God, what can we do? Pass the law. We'd have 50 of our inspectors. And here we are, you know, here we are. Here I am in Detroit, not in Cabo, when everything's fine down there. 1-888-64-NANCY, 646-2629, those people who think I'm making too much about this media oxygen stuff, here's your chance. Tell me I'm wrong. World Health Organization elevates pandemic threat levels. 4 to 5. World Health Organization reports 132 cases of the swine flu that pretty much is treatable by what we know now, our two medications, Tamiflu and Relenza. Until we figure that out, there were some early deaths in Mexico. Guess who has the most cases? Huh? The U.S. Not Mexico. According to this, 191 cases I hear. I mean, you know, here's the thing. They're saying because it's transmitted human to human, that it could, that, you know, that's why they raise the level. Folks, another thing, if we had this level of panic about what's really coming down the pike with global warming, because there's a whole thing about the whole warmer world, viruses are going to flourish in a warmer world, okay? Flourish. That's why they say in the summer we're better off. They're gonna flourish. There'll be lots more viruses, all dengue fever, all kinds of diseases. So this to me is an example of how careful and cautious we must be about the panic level. People are they're running out the supplies of drugs at the store. Their people are already preemptively trying to keep their kids home from school here in the U.S. even without official directions to do so. Chill out, folks. Take a deep breath on this one. I assure you, there's plenty to panic about. This ain't it. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Deborah is in Ontario, California. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you? Nancy, I just had a thought. I mean, I feel the same way. I got so annoyed last night watching CNN. They just were pounding it relentlessly. And my first thought was, well, you know, this drives up ratings and people stay tuned in. Okay, you know, you got to have news, I guess, 24/7 now. But
right.
My other thought is, and maybe just call me cynical, but, you know, what about this connection between Donald Rumsfeld and Tamiflu? You know, he stands to gain financially with worldwide sales of Tamiflu, and it's not even that effective. So I'm just wondering if there's somebody else quietly working behind the scenes to drive the message.
You know, I got some emails about that. Now, Tamiflu, is that Roche, I think, is the company?
I believe so.
And he was a lobbyist, or I know his connection with... what's the sweetener, the drug?
Aspartame. Yeah. Every time people drink a Diet Coke, Donald Rumsfeld gets a little richer, you know? And it's killing him. But, you know, that's a whole separate issue. But, I think he's got something to do with this.
But he may indeed. I don't know what his financial situation is with this company. I don't doubt what you're saying is true. I can't confirm that. But I doubt that the World Health Organization and everyone else is ginning this thing up for the sake of a proven loser in Donald Rumsfeld. He can't be that good. Even if he is making money off of this one, it's a bunch of crap. I'm sorry. More to come on the Nancy Skinner Show.
That's a good thing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, back in November, some folks were surprised that we showed up in Springfield at the end of our campaign. But then again, some folks were surprised that we even started our campaign in the first place. They didn't give us much of a chance. They didn't think we could do things differently. They didn't know if this country was ready to move in a new direction. But here's the thing. My campaign wasn't born in Washington. My campaign was rooted in neighborhoods just like this one, in towns and cities all across America, rooted in folks who work hard and look after their families and seek a brighter future for their children and for their communities and for their country. It was driven by workers who were tired of seeing their jobs shipped overseas, their health care costs go up, their dreams slip out of reach. It was grounded in a sense of unity and common purpose with every single American, whether they voted for me on Election Day or voted for somebody else. It was energized by every citizen who believed that the size of our challenges had outgrown the smallness of our politics. My campaign was possible because the American people wanted change. I ran for president because I wanted to carry those voices, your voices, with me to Washington.
And you have served us well, sir, Mr. President. It is the 100-day mark of the presidency, a so-called Hallmark holiday. I'm the Nancy Skinner Show. Yes, I'm live from Detroit, from the Motor City today, not in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, due to overwhelming media hysteria about a flu bug that's treatable. 1-888-64-NANCY. Some breaking news on this as we get into our discussion of this 100 days and how it's been covered in the power of media. Federal Reserve today saying that they are seeing signs. Seeing signs of recession ebbing, actually. That there's an easing and that the economic outlook has improved modestly since last month. Ben Bernanke, Fed chairman, they kept the rates the same. Basically, they didn't, like, almost zero. They said that the action they've already taken, $1.2 trillion effort last month, will gradually help booster activity. But they're already seeing signs continue to contract, but the pace of contraction appears to be somewhat slower. Okay, so that's on the economy. Housing rates came out today, 18.6% decline in housing values. But guess what? That's better than it was last month. Okay, that's 19%. A deal is imminent, as breaking news, on Chrysler tomorrow. Fiat, UAW, and Chrysler and the government to sign, ink a deal, which is huge. Huge progress, trust me, given all that had to be done to get all those different and disparate interests together at the table and make that happen. Because if Chrysler got set off tomorrow, if they went into liquidation tomorrow, the supply chain would have cascaded into General Motors and the auto industry. That's 1 in 10 jobs. That's radio, that's television, that's retail, that's dealers, that's commercial real estate, which is really on the edge. Commercial real estate, we haven't talked about that. Because it's like the next big thing that we had to not let happen, okay? And so, you know, as I look at what this president, his challenges over 100 days, and you look at the fact that they came in immediately in 100 days, it is unheard of that he passed the stimulus bill, $1 trillion stimulus bill, with not a single vote from the Republicans on the House side. Apparently, we got Arlen Specter's vote, even though it cost him his party. The housing bill. Okay, foreclosures, they're going to do another dip today so that if you have an equity loan, because that's stopping some of those people who want to get help with their first mortgage are getting stopped because they might have a home equity loan, and so the current setup is preventing them, so they're going to go back and take care of that situation. That should help home values even further than they've been able to stabilize the free fall in housing values. So they got that. They have the credit at banks, albeit not perfect, as I pointed out in the first hour, the TARP and the way it was done. They put new restrictions on that and executive compensation, and they're getting liquidity going, and they're going to have to go in with these stress tests, and it shut some banks down. But it was choked up to the point. All right, and here's my larger point. Fox News, and this is where we're talking about, of course, is, you know, the 100 days of opposition and no coverage, and Rush Limbaugh and all these guys, you know, he's pounding the table because of the plane mistake photo op. But what people have to realize is what we need the ghost of Christmas past here, folks. And I want to get a TV station that says, a channel that says, what would have been, what would have happened if we had not taken these steps? Because it's easy to say this was irresponsible spending, this fiscal stimulus bill. All of a sudden, the plane didn't crash, okay? Captain Sully landed the plane in the Hudson River. We were able to break down the door and save the plane. All right, but no one knows the picture, the movie, the what would have been had we not. I do. We'll talk about that as we come forward. But so it's so much easier for folks in coverage without that picture to say, oh, you're spending too much money and this and this and picking a plane and no, as frequently done on Fox News. Yes, where I am frequently up against 4 or 5 of those people telling them we needed to do exactly everything that we did. and was right about it. So joining me to talk about Fox News' fabulous 100 days of opposition coverage to the Obama administration is Carl Frisch. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. These guys are the hawks and watch all this stuff and have compiled the most fabulous 5 minutes of coverage on Fox News that you'll want to shower after watching it, but it is instructive, and Carl joins me now. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how are you, Nancy?
I'm fine. You know, obviously, I'm one of the opposition forces on Fox News, but I like to, you know, I certainly, they're fair game on my show. I had on Stuart Varney yesterday. You'll like this. Oh, you should get this, actually, because I was on Stuart Varney. He was filling in for Neil Cavuto last week, and we were talking about the auto bailout, and I said the new technology was in the pipeline, and I said the Chevy Volt. He said, they've canceled the Chevy Volt. He said that on Fox News.
Uh-huh.
I got all these emails from people. I'll get this. This is a little good snippet for your website. They canceled it? And I'm in Detroit. I live in Detroit. You know, I know everything that's going on.
Oh, that would be breaking news to you.
And of course. Like, really? They canceled it? Line director on my show, Tony Podowatz. And so I got these emails from people like, what the heck? And so he was on my show yesterday, and I called him on it. I said, you said it was canceled, and I'm giving you this opportunity. He said, I was wrong, and I apologize. Now, I don't know if you can take that five-minute film footage you got and get apologies out of all these people, but
I will have some folks look that up.
But tell us a little bit about your project here in the first 100 days and how it's been covered disparately, oddly enough, by the various networks.
Well, if it was April 1st, I would tell you that Fox News has done an exceptional job, but it's not April 1st, and I'm no April Fool. So they've done an awful job. You know, and it's telling because the vice president, senior vice president of Fox, Bill Shein, said that they were going to be a voice of opposition to Obama, and they're certainly living up to that. I don't think we've ever seen a major news network come out and say something like that before. But it's quite telling. So, you know, they had their little tea party. You know, I did a little count doing some research, and more than 1,400 times they've used words like socialism, communism, Marxism, Stalinism, fascism, et cetera.
How many times is that?
More than 1,400 since the inauguration on Fox News.
Do you have to watch all
Thankfully, no. Technology has come a long way.
Okay.
That's just looking through the closed captioning and transcripts of the shows.
Who's the worst? I mean, I'm mostly on Neil Cavuto's programs, but I certainly have done my fair share of Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and whatnot. You know, I'm on Fox Business. They seem not quite as bad on the Business Network, striving to compete with CNBC. But who's in your research, who's really gone? Well, I think I know this answer.
They've also got their own little nugget of awfulness,
okay,
if I can say that.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck brings the crazy.
Yeah.
He brings the crazy. Neil Cavuto brings the disarmingly bizarre notions of economic news. You know,
like what?
The market is, you know, tanking because of Obama and rising because of the Tea Parties. You would expect that from maybe a conservative in high school debate camp. You don't expect that from somebody who's supposed to be like the financial wizard of the Fox Empire. And then you've got Sean Hannity, who will pass on any Republican Party talking point that comes across his desk without blinking twice.
Yeah, he's just a walking talking point.
All right, and then you've got Bill O'Reilly, who sends his producer out to ambush people because he's too busy eating falafels in his shower.
All right, now you're creating visuals that I just can't handle, Carl. Here's the thing that I have, the question about this, and you guys will play a little bit of your piece that you've compiled, and you do look at this. Why the heck? I just read this piece about the ratings. The ratings are soaring for Fox, and people question why I go on and do this, because I say, you know what, they're number one in the cable news war, and that's just the way I started. I've been doing it for 10 years. I started on Neil Cavuto's show a long time ago, so I guess and I don't pull any punches. I don't get on there and say, you're right, you know what I mean? I don't. I fight them tooth and nail, so I don't feel that my integrity personally is ever at risk, because I get out there and say what I think. And if they're,
well, what I always tell people is, if they really don't think that anybody watching can be, you know, convinced of a different point of view, then what's happened over the last 6 years? You know, lots of people that identify as conservative or moderate have come to a more progressive ideology.
That's why Arlen Specter, honest to God, I so agree, and thank you, Carl, because I get so much. People said, I have blood on my hands because I even appear on that network. I got that email today. Are you kidding me? I don't get paid for this. I'm not a contributor.
It's hard to fight Hannity and O'Reilly and all them when you're not on their air.
Yeah, because they cut you off.
And we appreciate that you go on there because they won't have us on.
And they cut you off. Yeah, you're right. Well,
they're afraid of Media Matters.
I'm sure they are. But you know, here's the thing. Like, 200,000 Republicans defected, he said, in Arlen Specter said, to the Democratic rolls. I get emails all the time from folks. I mean, I get the ones and I read them. I call them my love letters. Like, I had sweaty hair and I must have done the janitor before I went on. That was yesterday. But I get all those really thoughtful emails to me,
right.
You know, viewers, emails.
You should look down more. Well, thank you. What do you think of what I said?
Yeah, the dumb blonde thing, you know, seems to be a pervasive theme. But I also get on a regular basis somebody that's thoughtful and says, you know, and I'm a Republican in the military. What you were talking about, this, it makes a lot of sense. I was on Cap and Trade. I was on Bulls and Bears this past week. A lot of people wrote me and said, I think that is the way to go, that, you know, it's a way to make money off of doing what's right, and I consider myself a Republican, but this is the way to do it. It's much, you know, so
right.
These are big audiences. And,
no, and I agree. Bull and Bears, that's actually the show I was thinking of, that after six weeks of economic uptick in the market, we're claiming that the Tea Parties were the cause of the uptick in the market.
Yeah. You know how many viewers they have? 1.5 million viewers.
Yeah.
So, anyways, are you able to hold, just because I really want to answer that question,
sure,
about why the ratings spike, yet the polls, the 100-day polls are in complete contrast to that. Carl Frisch is with Media Matters. He's a senior fellow there, and he's on the Fox Watch. This is fascinating to me, and I'm sure y'all have some thoughts about that. Come on, you chickens. All you people who write me these mean emails about how I'm a sellout or I'm a cop-out because I dare go on this network and try and debate these people, here's your chance. I got Media Matters on. I got Carl Frisch. I got the Fox Watch guy on. So here's your chance. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. Snipe in public. Why don't you do that? Give me a call. Tell me I'm a sellout to my face. I'm fair and balanced, right? I'm happy to hear you on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Woke up this morning, the world turned upside down. Load of us things ain't been the same since the blues walked in our town. Did you want it?
There's a sampling of Media Matters. The monitoring of Fox News, Carl Frisch is with me. He's the senior fellow at Media Matters, who's on the Fox case, for one, and has documented their stunning rise in just the short period of time. Carl, it says that since the inauguration, they have what actually happened to their ratings? They're now number two, and they surged.
I think they're the number one cable news network and the number two cable network overall.
One in news, two overall. Who's,
right.
And who's one overall?
Oh, I'm
not USA
sure.
Or ESPN?
It probably is USA.
Okay.
You know, they've got lots of good reruns on USA.
Right, right. Okay, so quick, let's get some calls in here, because I got someone who wonders why you're picking on Fox. Michael's in California. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Yeah,
hey, Michael.
Hi, Carl. Listen, I can understand criticizing Hannity. I don't really care for his ranting and raving. You know, he goes to, he's sort of like the Keith Olbermann of the Republican side. But, you know, with O'Reilly, I find that him being fair and balanced in the sense that...
Who is the person you're talking? I didn't catch the name of the second
person. O'Reilly.
You think O'Reilly's fair and balanced?
Well, yeah. I mean, on his show, he has this African-American professor. He has different guests who express their views. I understand that he slants to the right, but I don't see Keith Olbermann. I see
What do you think the words fair and balanced mean?
Well, having the equal speech on...
Ding, 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 ding. Equal.
I'm thinking he, do you see Keith Olbermann being equal and fair balanced?
Wait a minute. I want to give you an opportunity to explain to me what fair and balanced means.
He has people that disagree with him and that don't go down party lines to the Republicans or the Democrats. He has people that are objective, and he has different guests every day where people like with Keith Olbermann has the same guy from Newsweek as Peter this Wolf and Jonathan Adler.
Alter and Peter Wolf.
Okay, we don't have a whole lot of time, Carl. I want to get your response.
Here's my point on the term fair and balanced. Fair and balanced has nothing to do with news. Unless fair means the search for the truth and balance needs looking at both sides to find it. The whole notion that Fox has concocted that news is only fair and balanced when it's presenting the conservative point of view is just complete bunk. They use it to try and claim that the rest of the media is liberal and that they have no obligation to present the facts without a conservative prism because they're being fair and balanced against the rest of the media. O'Reilly's not fair, he's not balanced, and oftentimes he's just not accurate.
Oh, there's the word, accurate. We don't hear that often when it comes to coverage. This is a subject that's not going away, nor is Carl Frisch or Media Matters. David Brock and I go way back. I'm glad you guys are doing such great work, and I'm going to keep duking it out as best I can, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Check out MediaMatters.com. They're fabulous coverage of the first 100 days, the 5 minutes. You can stand it. And you'll get it, Michael. You'll get it if you watch that. You'll understand exactly what Carl was saying. And that's why I do what it is I do. Hey, if you're on the line, hang on the line. I'll take your calls. And anyone go after me, I'll give you your fair shot on the Nancy Skinner Show.
That some of the people in Washington, I'm surprised, it's important. She's so ambitious. She's been trying to do so much. Now, maybe they're not accustomed to this, but there's no mystery to what we've done. The priorities that we've acted upon were the things that we said we'd do during the campaign. I mean, it's not... It's not like anybody should be surprised. The policies we proposed were plans we talked about for 2 years in places like this, all across the country with ordinary Americans. The changes that we've made are the changes we promised. That's what you should expect from a president. You may not always agree with me, but if you take a look at what I said I was going to do when I was running for office, and you now look at what we are in the middle of doing, we're doing what we said we'd do.
And it's day 100. So, of course, it's time to have all kinds of silly accounting of if he did what he said he would do. Because that's what you do on the 100th day of a presidency. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, and I am Nancy Skinner live from Detroit, the Motor City. Yes, that's right. If you're just tuning in, swine flu hysteria has kept me here. And I am kind of, the good news is I am a little happy about that in that I do, will be able to catch the live press conference today on 100 days and go over this and try to disabuse some folks of what would have been had he not been president type accounting. And we're going to continue to do that. So, hey, by the way, I got to mention this, that you need to sign up to him. I'm getting a lot of emails asking about the show. You got to sign up on the website, Nancy Skinner Live. is it NancySingerLive.com. Just subscribe so that when we, you know, move, you will know where we are. And you can send me an email at Nancy@NancySkinnerLive.com. We'll get back to the whole media coverage of this stuff. But I wanted to take a look at one approach to the 100-day tracking of the Obama presidency, and that was done by PolitiFact. PolitiFact has something called the Obamater, which is clever, tracking Obama's campaign promises. And what they have done, PolitiFact has compiled more than 500 promises that the president made during his campaign, and they're tracking the progress on the Obamater. They rate the status as no action in the works or stalled, and if they find it the action completed, they rate that as promise kept, compromise, or promise broken. So they got an up-to-date tally of where he stands. Joining me to talk about the 100-day mark on the Obamater is Angela Holand, who is a reporter with PolitiFact.com. Thanks, Angie, for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Now, before I before we get into the record, let me just find out. I see your website was a Pulitzer Prize-winning website, PolitiFact. Tell me about PolitiFact.
Well, PolitiFact is an independent, nonpartisan website. We're affiliated with the St. Petersburg Times newspaper, which is the major metro newspaper covering Tampa Bay and Florida. And back in 2004, our Washington bureau chief was trying to think up a new way to cover campaigns that would bring more accountability to the people who were running for office. So in 2008, he came up with this idea, and we launched it as its own site called PolitiFact.
Too bad you didn't launch it in 2000. So we could really have a side-by-side comparison.
I know. I wish we could have launched it earlier. But, you know, this is a project that's really born of the Internet and the instant kind of fact-checking we can do with the Internet.
Yeah. So. Well, you've got a picture of the president on there saying, I want you to hold our government accountable. I want you to hold me accountable. And you've looked at this. So why don't you go through basically, in looking at this, you've identified what you all consider to be his top 25 promises, and the top 25. How did you arrive at those 25?
Right. Well,
given like 250,000 things he has on his to-do list right now.
Right. He has a very long to-do list. After the campaign was over, we went through all of his materials and speeches and picked out everything that we thought was a measurable promise, something that was objective that we could look at and say yes or no. And then to pick out the top 25 promises, we basically read through them all. We have a group of reporters and editors, about a half dozen of us, and we all got together and said, which ones do we think are the most emblematic of his campaign, and picked them that way. So,
okay. So the scorecard is such, promises kept 27, a compromise 7, promises broken 6, stalled 3, in the works 63, and no action as of yet 408.
That's right.
Let's start with promises kept. What are the biggies?
The promises kept are very reflective of what he campaigned on. If you scroll through them, you'll see promises about alternative energy, about trying to bring the economy more towards green jobs. That was one of his very persistent themes on the campaign trail. He's also sent more money to health care and
You have it listed as number 125. Direct military leaders to end the war in Iraq. I would say that was like pretty much number one on his. I would say number one on his list, at least throughout the primary. That was what distinguished him from Secretary of State Clinton.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on that. In fact, we decided this week we wanted to pick out the number one promise that was emblematic of his campaign, and that was a strong second. We did ultimately go with his promise to invest with all types of alternative energy because we just felt that that was more had more of an impact on the economic problems that he's having to face now that, of course, nobody was thinking about back in the primary last year.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that. Let's, before we get to that, because it's a whole new, you know, you campaign thinking you're going to get just your basic run-of-the-mill billion-dollar deficit, two wars, a broken health care and energy system, you know, just your standard run-of-the-mill, what you get after 8 years of Republicans running the country. And then all of a sudden you get a global economic meltdown with a credit crisis that a systematic financial system meltdown. meltdown that has pervaded all financial institutions, bank and non-bank alike, in addition to a housing crisis with downward spiraling housing prices on top of a GDP that falls off a cliff. So those aren't promises per se. I'm going to stop us from being like grapes in the wrath. I don't remember any of that discussion during the campaign about grapes of wrath prevention.
You know, it's interesting. One of the there have been a couple of cases where he's really overshot his promise, like he kept his promise and then some. And an example of that is back during the campaign, he said he would create a foreclosure prevention fund. And during the campaign, he said, we're going to spend $10 billion on this. Well, when he took office, he sent $75 billion to that. So we marked it promise kept.
Yeah. Well, he as a result of necessity, because the situation worsened. I mean, last September, well, he got elected in November, but September things were really starting to get bad. But then even after his election, that's when, at the end of the year, an honest assessment was, you know, all these, the suits were like, whoa, we've never seen anything like this. All right, so let's look at, before we continue, because I want to do a whole special on what would have been. I think this is something you guys should do, mm-hmm. because what would, we just had Media Matters on about Fox and their coverage, sort of the opposition on that. So, so my producer's telling me we're going to take a little break. I want to come back up and we'll talk about the promises that are broken, that you have cited his promises broken, and what has not been done in 100 days. And then I also want to talk about, you know, kind of what would have been if some of these things hadn't happened, because that's the thing that people aren't going to miss tonight as we watch this nonstop. What is it? Grading of our president. I'm seeing that mindless stuff on CNN. What is your thoughts? Does he get an A? Does he get a C? Does he get a D? Can you imagine what he must be feeling like watching that news coverage? I just want to jump through the TV and strangle some of these people. I didn't sign up for this. I'm making $200,000 a year to do fix all of this? Swine flu pirates? Are you kidding me? 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 1-888-646-2629. Which one are you happiest about? Promise broken or kept? PolitiFacts is checking it out. We'll continue on the other side of the Nancy Skinner Show. That feel like 1,000 and probably are in Einstein's theory of relativity, given the ever-escalating speed of the universe warping crises one after another that this president has inherited. It's the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629 as we are going over the Obamator. PolitiFact, that's a toughie for me, .com is the website, and they are a nonpartisan organization with the St. Petersburg Times associated with them, but they took the first 100 days, they took 500 promises that the president made during his campaign, and they're holding him to his own challenge about accountability. Angie Holin is a reporter who's been on the project and written some articles about the big picture and how he's done. We just went through the promises he has kept. War in Iraq, big one. No, because Angie, I actually ran against President Obama in the Senate, U.S. Senate primary in Illinois. So I was on the debate, vice presidential debate team, in terms of all the research and his speeches. I helped prep the governor of Michigan to play Sarah Palin in the debate. So I'm quite familiar with a lot of what was promised. Actually,
wow.
Very, very familiar.
Yeah, you had the inside view
of what the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, all the issues were, and let's look at the Obama promises broken. And what are you guys pointing out there?
Right. Well, a few of them, about three, were tax-related promises where Obama didn't seem to have much support in Congress at all, and so he kind of put them to the wayside, never mentioned them, didn't include them in his budget plan. Probably the biggest one that people talk about is we rated his promise to close the revolving door on lobbyists as promise broken. And the reason for this is he didn't talk about exceptions during the campaign. He talked about a ban on lobbyists for 2 years. And then when they took office, they had this waiver clause. And then in addition to the waiver clause, they also had recusals, which are not, there's no documentation that we can access to check this out. So we just felt like the loophole here was too large for it to get a promise kept, and we rated it promise broken.
Mm-hmm. You know, before I get to your big picture, because you wrote that, co-wrote that piece on the big picture overall, you know, a lot of people are, the whole idea of having interrogations and investigations of Bush officials for crimes about the torture thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are very, very upset that he is not engaged in that immediately, and we've had this big difference over timing. I don't remember during the campaign, if you are looking at what he ran on, I can't remember a single instance of the president saying that he was going to run on investigating and putting them in jail. If I'm wrong, because you went through all his promises, then here's your chance to correct me.
I haven't seen anything like that either. We've seen him make statements many times saying, I don't like to look backwards, I like to look forwards. And then he'll also say, at the same time, we have laws that we need to enforce. But we have not located any specific promise about prosecuting anybody for torture.
So that's why when I say people are surprised, you know, he's not saying these need to begin immediately. It's because he's made 500 other promises, really, really important stuff, not to say that he's not going to. Okay, so tell me your big picture. You wrote the piece, and it says here that, you know, basically you think he's done a yeoman's job of keeping some of the big whoppers, and he's on track for the rest.
Right. We talked to a lot of political experts for this story. We looked at his campaign. We looked at the issues now. And based on all of that reporting, we found that Obama is sticking to his campaign platform very much so. And he's even wedding his campaign promises to solutions to fix the economy, like on alternative energy. He's talked about using health care, reforming health care to make the long-term budget picture better. One of the government watchers we interviewed said he thought the headline was Obama shocks political veterans by keeping his promises.
It's like an onion. It's an onion headline, you know?
Yeah.
President keeps promises. You know, because infamously, I will remember, or I recall that President Bush, one of his first decisions was to reverse himself on the Kyoto Protocol and regulating CO2. Like immediately upon taking office, it's almost like it was just a big joke. You guys can't retrospectively go back because of the way you've done this, right, and sort of do apples and oranges.
Well, we really don't have the staff to go backwards, so we just want to go.
You want to be like Obama.
Yeah, we want to look forwards, you know. Although we've gotten a lot of emails from readers, and we wrote a blog post on it, and I do have a lot of sympathy for people who would like to see the same standards applied, but we've got to move forward.
You know, I mean, even if there's the simple measures, like I remember those $4 bills at one of the debates. I don't know if you remember that. He pulled out $4 bills. He used to talk about, well, this, we're going to pay down the debt with this one. This is education. Mm-hmm. This is tax cuts. And I can't remember what the fourth one, but it was like none of that happened. Not a single one of them happened. And it is like a blur, and everyone's just like, oh, thank God it's over with. Okay, now they heap all this on, you know, this guy. But anyways, you've done a really good job with this website. So, folks, if you need to, you know, they mark the promises. They show you what he's done. It's a really a well-researched and delivered analysis. And Angie Holin, thanks for doing such good work.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's politifact.com. If you want to check it out, all right. And we'll get your assessment. I want to know what, out of this 100 days, was the best moment for you? What was your worst? And I'll let you, whatever it is, it's your best and worst moment. I'm not going to give you this mindless grading thing. Best moment, worst, okay? 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629 to the Nancy Snow Show.
read the paper in bed, and in the personal columns there was this letter I read. If you like pina coladas, get started.
We all know this one, don't we?
If you're not into yoga,
if you have such a great audience. Whether they love me or hate me, or sometimes a little of both, I think it is. Democrats and Republicans, I have all of them, and I have Democrats who love me and Democrats who hate me. Probably, I know I have some Republicans who like me and listen to me. I don't know. If you're a Republican and you hate me, actually, probably I have you too. certainly from emails. That song, this is funny. So Jim writes in. Speaking of the pina colada thing, this is his version of it. He's toying with me. I think I was tired of my radio show. The audience and I been together too long, like a tired Limbaugh of a conservative throng. So while there was dead air, I read the emails out loud. In the spam, there was this letter that read, if you like pina coladas and broadcasting from exotic places, if you're not into anger and you have half a brain, if you like discussing bank failures in the heat of the financial district, then I'm the station you'd look for. Write to me and escape. I didn't think the audience, I know that sounds kind of mean, but me and my audience had fallen into the same old dull routine. So I responded to the spam, filled out an informational ad, and though I'm nobody's sucker, the deal wasn't half bad. He didn't finish it, but that was very creative of you, Jim. Thank you. I do appreciate it. I don't sing like him. But it is an Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64 Nancy. On here live, yes, that's true. I am in Detroit doing my show on the eve of a deal that is reached for Chrysler. Amen. Say an amen. Come on, everybody. Hands in the air. Amen. Because even if you didn't support it, it's going to help you. It's going to make the situation better. It is 100 days of the Obama presidency, and we're talking about the brightest moments for you and good moments, bad moments. And I also want to get to what would have been. See, that's going to be the very, very tough part about this politically, is that had he not been elected, had he not implemented the policies, because you saw how focused everyone gets on the media and the swine flu, right? So it was all in front of them to see. Imagine this. Because the prospect was that we would have had depression-like recession. That's generally a drop-off of over 10%. 25% unemployment. Right now, most people think that it's going to top out about 10 or 11. Now, the Fed is saying we're starting to see some signs of recovery. The housing market has stopped diving. When I first started the show, I was telling you, bottomless pit. Going to move from homes into commercial real estate. Now it's starting to, like that plane, when you get it right before it crashes, starting up. If we had some way of communicating what would have happened had that fiscal stimulus bill not been passed to the hysterical response from the far right that it did, because it's easy for them to say it was irresponsible spending, even though their own economists say, it had to happen. There were no other tools. There were no other weapons that would have prevented a complete meltdown. And you think that Detroit's having it bad? You would have seen. I saw a study today, New York Times, I'll pull this up, ABC News study, that said 1 in 4 people have had someone's lost a job or in their family, someone they know in their family, and the numbers were much greater in their immediate circle of people. So this is hurting people on a real level, and what they're not seeing is how bad it really would have gotten. They're getting rescued, and they're not seeing the full trajectory that they were on. And so that's what's going to be difficult. Now, in terms of what you think of the good and the bad since the inauguration, I'm going to give you my good first, okay? And I think you all know what this one is. Best.
We can't rest until we harness the renewable energy that can create millions of new jobs and new industries. You know, the Recovery Act will double the supply of renewable energy, but the only way to truly spark an energy transformation is through a gradual, market-based cap on carbon pollution so that energy clean energy is the profitable kind of energy. And we can do this in a way that creates jobs. That's how we can grow our economy, enhance our security, and protect our planet at the same time.
Yay! You know, that whole planet thing, the thing we're on, energy security, jobs, and the planet. To me, that was a moment of nirvana. That was from today at a town hall in St. Louis. Tonight will be a full-time press conference. 1-888-64-NANCY-646-2629. I really do. I want to know, what was your best moment? What was the moment you were so happy you voted for this man? And what was the moment, if you had one or didn't, that you, and I'm looking at all political stripes, maybe you were a Republican and you didn't vote for him, but you, there's one thing you like about the guy. Pick up the phone, okay? Or maybe you there's nothing you like about him, but I think that'd be a hard one. 1-646-2629, the Obama 100-day mark. Tom is in Northridge, California. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. This is a good time for me, Nancy, because this is a 100 days of liberation here, you know?
Yeah. Feeling good. It's a good day for you.
Yeah. Well, with President Obama accepting the election night at Grant Park was the best, because I was a teenager during the 68 convention where they had all the problems in Chicago. So that was beautiful. You
yeah.
know?
Tom, I was there. I was right there, like 30 feet from the president, watching a sea of people on a 76-degree day with the whole background of the whole city skyline, and it'll be a moment. Obviously, I will, you know, take to my grave. It was euphoric was the only way to describe it.
Yes, it was wonderful. But and being a Vietnam era veteran, they have to go after the Bush administration on this torture thing, and the Justice Department really has to step up and do something. We can work with John Dean and other lawyers to get this done. It can be done in conjunction with all the renewable energy and things. It is the right time, Nancy.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. 1-888-64 Nancy. Let's move on to Rich is going to give us his good and his bad. They seem to be one and the same. Oddly enough, I'll let you explain it. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi, Nancy. I'm just reading on Automotive News.
Yes.
That it's reporting that Barack Obama is planning to announce Thursday morning that Chrysler will file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as it completes its alliance with Fiat. Actually, the Bloomberg News reported this, and I'm reading it on.
Yeah. Essentially, there's a couple ways to look at that. They have a deal. All the parties have reached a deal, I think, except for a couple of recalcitrant bondholders. And so they're going to try and do the quick rinse with those bondholders is essentially what's happening.
Oh, okay.
You know, that there are a couple holdouts that they can't get to the table.
Right.
So since all the major parties have done it, that a judge can do that. So it's not like... As long as UAW, Fiat, and all the major debt holders are on board, a couple of small ones aren't, some hedge funds and such.
Sure.
So that's why they have to do it. So it is a good development.
Okay, good.
Okay?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Okay, great, thanks. 1-888-64, Nancy, your best moment in this Obama presidency, the day you were so happy that you voted for the guy, or the bad day that you said, I wish I wouldn't have, instead of the stupid grading stuff. Let's go to Woodland Hills and talk to Marty. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Not in Cabo, hanging out on a beach, but I'm talking to you from Detroit, so that's okay.
Oh.
Are you there, Marty? Hello? All right. We'll get Marty back on the line. You're in a dead zone there for a little bit, Marty. And we will continue with this if you have. I mean, this could be coverage about, you know, the give him a grade. And here's the thing that I really want everybody to consider as you're watching all this coverage tonight. It's what would have happened. Can you even imagine? Like, picture this. McCain and Palin. White House. The only thing Limbaugh has, my honey bunny, poor little guy, to beat him up about on the way over here really is they have two things. One of substance that they think is the vote on the stimulus bill. And they think that is, the public is just going to be, you know, up in arms. So the Tea Parties were a complete, you know, they were a complete, what do you call them, failure route. Because, no, everybody wanted that action. The polls, he has the highest approval rating of any president at this point in his presidency. They wanted that. People are hurting. They knew that something had to be done. And that we've had tax cuts going to the wealthiest Americans for 8 years. It hasn't done what was promised of it in terms of the broader economy, health care, nothing done. So they're very happy about that. So the only thing that Limbaugh has, he wasn't hanging on a plane and a photo op. Because this White House military office obviously did something pretty boneheaded. I was reading that story. Something just doesn't sound right to me about that. This is a Bush administration holdover, is it not? Am I wrong about that? It just sounded... Something was off with that. But that's what they got. That's what they got to pick on him. He rescued the economy. Fixing some of those fundamental issues. Building our house on a house of rock instead of a house of sand. The rest of the world likes us. Again, I think they got the swine flu thing pretty much under control. Even if everyone's freaking out, I feel pretty comfortable. What else is good? The pirates seem to calm down. All the piracy at the high seas. He got them, man. He issued the order. They hated that. It's like so macho. He just took care of that situation. If that captain is at risk, do what you need to do. The captain comes home to a welcoming... But you wake up and you go, oh my God. Possible? Can really good things happen? Well, really bad things aren't happening. It's like they were in Route 2. Are we out of the thick of it? No, we're not. Are we on our way? Yes, I can tell you with absolute certainty that we, in fact, are out of the worst of it. I'm happy to be here in Detroit delivering that very, very good news on a very important day for my hometown and this country, all of us, the 100th day of the Obama presidency.
Understand, you're who I'm working for every single day in the White House. I've heard your stories. I know you sent me to Washington because you believed in the promise of a better day. And I don't want to let you down. You believed that after an era of selfishness and greed, that we could reclaim a sense of responsibility on Wall Street and in Washington, as well as on Main Street. You believed that instead of huge inequalities and an economy that's built on a bubble, we could restore a sense of fairness to our economy and build a new foundation for lasting growth and prosperity. You believed that at a time of war, we could stand strong against our enemies and stand firmly for our ideals and show a new face of American leadership to the world. That's the change you believed in. That's the trust you placed in me. It's something I will never forget. The fact that you made this possible. So today, on my 100th day in office, I've come back to report to you, the American people, that we have begun to pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off, and we've begun the work of remaking America.
If that doesn't make you feel good, I don't know what would possibly make you feel good. We have picked ourselves up and dusted ourselves off, and we are on the road to recovery from a long, long 8 years. On the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY. That's 646-2629. I think that the president is well on his way. I'm sorry. I you know, call me what you will. I do. I've, for me personally, to see somebody. But I just think, I was asked from the beginning, you have had this incredible experience to, you know, run against this guy. It was a joke. I should call to my friends when I jumped in that race And it was an open Senate seat saying that there's a, the one guy they said is pretty good, but his name is Barack Obama. And everyone laughed. I mean, this is how wild a ride this has been for me. And then, of course, having debated him a number of times and, you know, seen his intellectual depth, I used to say, it summed up when people asked me, I mean, well before he was considered presidential material, what do you think of this guy when he ran? And then he went on to run against, we had seven people in our race, and then he went on to run against Alan Keyes, because this race was so comical. You had... on the Republican side, there was this guy, oh gosh, no, I can't believe his name is going to escape me. He was married, Krieger, you might know this, to the woman who was Star Trek. His wife, Terry, someone help me with that. 1-888-64 Nancy is the number of the program. She was the really pretty woman on, I have to think of it, he had public court documents that they drug out during the race that he wanted to have sex in public. Certainly someone remembers that. Sex in at these New York bars, and she divorced him because of that. She was a star in the movie or the TV series Star Trek. And anyways, very good-looking Republican guy, completely a rich investment banker, seemingly like he would make it on the other side because there were eight Republicans on the other side, and that guy blew up. So in the end, it ended up that when Obama won this race by 30 points, even though he was going into it with three frontrunners, someone who had spent $32 million of his own money, in that race, and the president, he won by, like, it was 30 points. It was crazy. And, you know, given the polls. And so I just said, people asked me, I said, three eyes. Intelligence, certainly, absolutely. If that's not clear to you, I don't know what planet you live on at this point. Integrity. And he did. And Michelle was at all those events. Wonderful woman, nice to me. And he and I got along well. Just, you can tell someone from their integrity on how he treated me and everyone else in that race and the person he was. And then instinct. That undescribable, je ne sais quoi of politics, instinct. And that is knowing what the people need to hear and when they need to hear it. And what people needed to hear during that campaign was, yes, we can. There is hope. Things seem really dark now, but there are solutions. And just when you want to throw your hands up and say, I don't need, especially when you're in the thick of it, I don't even know how we're going to get over it, he is able to communicate a sense of relief and hope. And I think that's something that you're talking about there. Hi, Valerie.
Well, hi. Hey, I just wanted to call in. I was a Republican most of my life, and I just this last election switched and became a Democrat. And really the reason was Hillary was running at the time, and I didn't know enough about Barack Obama. And then when she, you know, was no longer in the race and I started watching him, I just fell in love with him. And I was just telling the guy who screens calls that he's younger than I am, but he's such a father figure. You feel so comfortable, like he's in charge. He knows what to do. He's got everything under control. And he just never lets me down. I haven't seen him do anything that disappointed me or frightened me or made me, you know, disappointed that I had voted for him.
Well, you know what, Valerie, coming from someone who's been a lifelong Republican, to hear you say that just makes my heart glow.
Oh.
That's really good to hear. And I think that's what he tried to do. No red states, no blue states. We're all one America, and we are on our road to a better America, is what he said, and he promised, and he's delivered. On this, the 100th day of the Obama presidency. Be back tomorrow.